Okay, Carol, can you still hear me all right?
Yes, I can.
Okay, perfect. So we are on a recorded line, and I'd like a kind of detailed view last week. Obviously, the, I guess, motive behind the story comes amid everything that Perry Township community is facing right now with the loss of several students. And, you know, I want to take a different approach with this story, though, and more make an effort to try and educate the community and, more importantly, mothers and fathers who may have children in that district or, you know, just parents in general. So with that mindset, let's start first. I know you mentioned that you are very familiar with those, you know, who may be having suicidal thoughts or, you know, counseling those individuals is kind of your area of expertise. So let's talk kind of in general about suicide. First and foremost, you mentioned during a press conference last week that, you know, there isn't just one thing that makes a person decide they want to take their own life or may want to try to take their own life. Tell me a little bit about maybe the different things that can lead up to the triggers, things that maybe can combine to push someone that direction.
Okay, let me start with, again, the comment that even children as young as seven, and we had a seven-year-old take his own life in 2009, don't take his or her life based on one event. And I think that's the thing that parents need to understand. Now, when we talk about what kinds of events or stressors could lead youth, especially, to consider suicide as an option, this could be a combination of any stressors youth are dealing with. And let's take the two final triggers that I shared that we see sometimes in suicides. Any kind of relationship problem. When young people connect with a partner, sometimes they think this partner is my soulmate, and when that partner leaves, it's very devastating to them. Same thing when we're dealing with family conflicts. And as I shared in the news conference, peer relationships and families are the best support for youth. So when there are problems in either of those areas, parents really need to, again, put their antennae up to start identifying what's going on with my child. Now, what are some other stressors? And again, it was brought up at the news conference. Obviously, there are things like bullying that goes on, although bullying was not identified necessarily in all the youth suicides of Perry, and I think the chief pointed that out, Chief Pomeski. But testing that goes on in schools, identity issues with youngsters, the fact that they are beginning to form relationships with peers, and peers are, and I don't mean intimate relationships, I mean peers in general. Peer acceptance is so extremely important. Their own self-identity in terms of how they look, their physical appearance, making any kind of decision that will impact them. Sports, what am I going to join? What am I going to do? What about my grades? So school issues could impact them. Just about anything that a youngster is dealing with today, Michaela, is, could provide a stressor. And that's what's so problematic. We adults, I don't believe, totally recognize or perceive how some of those stressors can be almost life or death stressors for young people who are struggling, because they're looking at things in terms of black or white, yes or no. Mm-hmm. So any kind of stressor, if school is a stress, if they're having problems at school, if they're having problems in terms of their test scores, their grades, their sports. But interestingly enough, that doesn't seem to be a factor when police investigate suicides, although it is a major stressor. I'm not going to rule it out. I started my professional career as a high school teacher, so I know how important school stressors are. But I think today's child cannot get away from the ongoing contact with what's going on. And I think that's one of the biggest issues that we see, that social media connection never stops. For example, the most common times that young people are on their iPhones, 12 a.m. to 4 a.m.
Wow.
So they're not even sleeping. And it used to be a good 10 years ago that when children left school, they could leave all the stuff there. But now, with the social media and what it does and how it keeps young people constantly on alert with a little bit of everything, that to me is a real devastating issue. And that's one of the problematic things that kids are struggling with.
Absolutely.
So you, You name it. You name it, and it could be a stressor. Now, here's my best definition of suicide prevention. To truly do suicide prevention, what we need to help people do, and I'm going to focus mostly on youth, although this really is applicable across all ages, we need to help youth address those stressors as they surface. If it's a school stressor, help them address it. If it's a relationship stressor, if it's an identity stressor, who they are, their self-awareness, their self-esteem, because as each of these stressors pop up, if young people don't address them, they do something that I call fester. They start layering on top of each other. And from that standpoint, that festering can get them to a point where they feel they're out of control. They're the hopeless, helpless, worthless. Mm-hmm. So from the standpoint of whatever is going on in a young person's life, that's where parents need to be tuned into, you know, what are some of the issues my son or daughter, my niece or nephew, what are the issues that they're trying to address? How can I help them learn how to problem solve, how to cope with it? Because there's the bottom line that young people, again, anywhere from, you know, obviously elementary on, don't have the coping skills, the stress management skills, or the problem solving skills. So it's all or nothing to them.
Yeah. Well, and you know, a couple of things from that, Carol. So first of all, you know, you talk about, well, what is the stressor? And I think any more in this society, people want a Band-Aid fix. Well, if I fix that, then all the problems go away. And as a parent, you know, one would be really, I guess, terrified to think there isn't a Band-Aid fix because, you know, it could be basically every element of my child's life, if not handled the right way, could lead them to consider taking their own life, you know, as you mentioned. So what would you say to parents, and I know you touched on some suicide prevention there, and I want to get into that more in depth in a moment, but what would you say to parents who are going, okay, so where do I start? You know, how do I do this?
Now, this is probably going to be one of the toughest suggestions for parents, but I say it every time I have an opportunity, Michaela. Because of the number of suicides that have now occurred, this is a perfect time where parents have to address suicide. And I know it's scary, and I know some parents still believe, if I talk about suicide, I'm going to put it in my child's head. That is not the case. The perfect time right now is to get a comfortable situation going where you have the parent has the undivided attention of their young person and start the discussion about suicide. Now, they can start by simply saying, do you know anybody who has suicidal thoughts? I noticed there are so many students so far in Stark County that have taken their lives. Do you have any friends who are thinking about suicide? And see if the child, the son or daughter, the young person responds. But eventually, that parent needs to get to the question, have you ever thought about it? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the toughest thing that parents need to ask. Because I have had shared with me scenarios from parents who actually took that important step and asked their sons and daughters. And guess what? Some of them actually had their sons and daughters say yes.
Wow.
And if the parent would not have asked, I mean, parents talk about drugs, they talk about sex, they talk about school, they talk about everything. But they don't include suicide, and this is now a prime time where they really need to start talking. Now, I also shared some warning signs when we had the news conference. So, and maybe the easiest thing to share with a parent is if there's any kind of behavior change in your child, put up your antennae. And start by letting that child know that you notice something different about him or her, and start the dialogue there. We truly believe, and again, I use research, I use our own professional experience, that the majority of young people give warning signs that some dangerous move is being anticipated, and that dangerous move is suicide, because they want people to pick up those changes. That's why schools have initiated how to recognize warning signs in your peers, but that's what parents, that's what family members need to do. Any kind of change they see in their son or daughter, start the dialogue there. You know, let's say they've been isolating themselves more. Then the parent can start the conversation. You know, you seem to be going to your room more than what you've done in the past. What's going on? And just see if the person will talk about it.
Right.
Because that's where when there are behaviors that concern parents, that's where they really, really need to start. Now, from the standpoint of if there are no behaviors there, because, again, there are parents who say, well, my child seems to have everything fine, so I'm not worried. My comment would be, but why don't you see whether or not your son or daughter has ever thought about it? Because the day a person takes his or her own life, hang on one second. The day a person takes his or her own life is not the first time they thought about it.
Right, right, absolutely. And now you talked about the warning signs. Now you mentioned isolation specifically. What other, I guess, go-to signs would you say would be red flags for parents to look out for?
Eating and sleeping changes. Emotional changes, mood changes. Risky behavior, more secretive behavior, sometimes almost putting their lives in order. Now, sometimes young people will not do this with parents, but they will do this with friends, like giving a friend an expensive piece of equipment. Anything that says, I'm now looking at a closure in my life.
I'm no longer going to need this, essentially.
I'm no longer going to need this. But primarily for parents, eating and sleeping, the mood changes, the risky behavior, the secretive behavior, and any kind of isolation or withdrawal, because those are the classic things that kids sometimes will show at home as well as school,
right?
As well as in the community.
Right. Now, going back to when you said, this is the time for parents to bring up the topic of suicide, as difficult as it may be. Now, Carol, do you mean Stark County parents? You know, this is the time, obviously, in light of, I hate to say that it's a way to break into that conversation, but the tragedies Perry Township has faced, like you mentioned, is kind of momentum for parents to have a door to open, essentially. But now, what about parents outside of Stark County, say Tuscarawas County, for instance? Is there an appropriate time or age when maybe they need to have those conversations?
From the standpoint of conversations about suicide can actually start as early as 10 and 11.
Okay.
Some parents freak out and think, what do you mean 10 and 11-year-old? The same year we had a 7-year-old take his life, we had an 11-year-old. And
yeah.
Statistics start being collected at 5 years of age.
Wow.
So anytime parents see changes in behavior, this is what I would recommend. First of all, let's go back to what I said earlier. Identify the change that parent sees and see if the child will sit down and talk about it. Now, as a parent talks with that child, let's say this child is isolating more. As a child talks about any of the feelings, any of the problems, any whatever it is, it may not even be suicide. It may be a relationship problem. It may be some other stressor. But if the parent starts the dialogue there and gets the child talking about it, you know, that's the perfect place to say, you know, this seems to be really causing you a major problem. You're really upset about this.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been so upset that you've considered suicide?
Right, right, definitely. And you know, another thing I want to touch on, and there are just so many areas to this, Carol, you know more than I do, but another, topic of conversation was the terminology used during that press conference about a suicide contagion. Now, obviously you mentioned, you know, you're not going to touch someone and then suddenly want to commit suicide,
mm-hmm.
but it still seems that there's some kind of correlation going on where, I don't know if it's more accepted or, I don't know, what can you kind of explain that a little bit?
Well, from what our perspective is, and I'm a member of the Stark County Suicide Prevention Coalition, so I've heard it from other members. What we're aware of now, Michaela, is that suicide is a primary option for youngsters. It was not that a good 5 years ago.
Wow.
It was on the back burner. But right now, suicide is an option, and for some youngsters, a first option. So that's the scary thing. Now, when I say contagion, and by the way, some research uses copycat, but I'll be honest with you, copycat is what kids say to each other, oh, you're a copycat. To me, that minimizes the intensity of suicide. That's why contagion, for me, is a more appropriate word, because
mm-hmm.
it's not a physical passing on of an illness. It's a psychological passing on. of an illness. Mm-hmm. And that illness is a feeling that life is not worth living. Some emotional despair is there, leading that young person to think, I'd rather be dead than deal with this. So contagion says things are spreading. Things are spreading. And the spreading is or can be caused by whatever element that child recognizes or associates with.
Wow.
Like a school.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a famous person. I used it at the news conference way back when Kurt Cobain took his own life. Mm-hmm. There was a real fear that young people would start. So it could be something as separate as a famous movie star, a singer. It could be a school. Now, here's one thing we do know, and I was made aware that the child who was a graduate of Harry who took her own life mm-hmm. was very close with the female student who took her life. I have support groups called Survivors of Suicide Loss. I have for 20 years. And family and friends who lose close associates, close family members, close friends, are now at 2 to 3 times higher risk of suicide.
Wow.
This is why the first thing that was done by Perry PD is to take a look at how are they connected with each other. Are they in the same activity, same sports, you name it. And nothing came up. Nothing came up.
Wow.
So the only thing that we can think of is, one, they belong to Perry High School or Perry Local Schools. So that might be the element that's the contagion. It could be simply that, and I simply doesn't minimize it, but it could be as plain as suicide is now an option. And I'll be honest with you, because I said it at the news conference at one of the questions. I don't know if it was picked up on the video that was played. But 13 Reasons Why, when it hit Netflix and it played out the whole activity, I don't know how many vulnerable youngsters saw that as an option, because it introduced it as an option right now on mm-hmm. screen. The book itself was definitely not as graphic. I read the book. I watched the Netflix. So it's out there as an option. So when contagion hits, we know it causes a spreading of a psychological issue, but we don't know how it starts. And that's the biggest thing I think that Chief Pomeski is trying to struggle with. He's trying to see, because he was on the news again last night, Channel 8 News, Fox News, where he's getting all the cell phones, he's trying to get the computers, all the iPads, to see is there any kind of connection that can make sense of what these young people saw.
Mm-hmm.
But contagion, again, is the closest we can come, because there's nothing that we're able to identify from a behavioral health perspective, from a police perspective, that connected them. But because, again, young people are definitely emotionally driven, and when I teach a class, I share that cortex, that executive functioning frontal part of the brain, is not developed until a person is 25. They
right.
don't have, teens don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're working on their emotions, they're working on the impulsivity, and they're working on an absence of coping skills. It's not surprising anymore today that it can develop into something called a contagion, because they see that others are doing it. This is a way out.
Tell me if I'm wrong here, but it sounds like there are really, I mean, there's so much information and so many different aspects when we talk suicide that we could talk for hours.
And I honestly could, Michaela, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And that's why when I was asked if I would be part of that news conference, when you asked if you could interview me, the more information we get out, the more we try to give encouragement, especially to families,
mm-hmm.
because, again, let me add two more things.
Sure.
Health classes. Parents who are concerned that they shouldn't bring up the topic of suicide because they might put it in their loved ones' heads. And, again, that is not true. The newest health books actually have chapters on mental illness and suicide.
Right.
Duh. Because you've got to talk about it. The key is we cannot make somebody suicidal if they're not there. But we can stop somebody from killing himself if we interact and intervene in time. And that's where parents are prime pieces of what I call the puzzle that we need to include in this, because school people are getting trained. We're training young people. And, in fact, I'm involved with Perry in the SOS Signs of Suicide program. But we've got to get parents on board. And have them comfortable talking to their young people about suicide.